fact that Kim Jong-un's people were willing to pick up the phone and call the Republic of Korea is a strong indication that our maximum pressure campaign is working.
The U.S. and South Korea suspend military exercises until after the Olympics. It's Friday, January 5th, and this is VOA Asia. I'm David Byrd in Washington. Also ahead, the U.S. suspends military and security aid to Pakistan. President Trump meets with lawmakers on immigration reform. And a Chinese ride-hailing giant buys Brazilian taxis. It's all on today's VOA Asia. We're glad you're with us this morning. The United States and South Korea have decided to delay joint military exercises until after the Pyeongchang Winter Olympics next month. South Korea's Blue House said the decision came during a phone call between U.S. President Donald Trump and President Moon Jae-in early on Thursday. A White House statement said both leaders agreed to de-conflict the Olympics and our military exercises so that the United States and the Republic of Korea forces can focus on ensuring the security of the Games. During Thursday's phone call, the White House said President Trump and President Moon agreed to continue the campaign of maximum pressure against North Korea and to not repeat mistakes of the past. State Department spokeswoman Heather Nauert said Thursday the recent moves by North Korea to reopen communications with South Korea shows that the U.S.-led campaign of maximum pressure is working.
We have information and evidence that the pressure campaign is really putting the squeeze to the money that the DPRK gets and has been using for its illegal nuclear and ballistic missile programs. So we know that that is having an effect.
The annual joint military exercises, known as Full Eagle, are usually held between February and April and are one of the world's largest such drills. The exercises combined ground, air, naval, and special operations to increase readiness to defend South Korea and the region. North Korea routinely objects to the exercises. President Trump had tweeted that his firm and strong leadership was the impetus for a scheduled resumption of talks between North and South Korea. However, Defense Secretary Jim Mattis said at the Pentagon Thursday that the exercises would resume after the conclusion of the March 9th to 18th Paralympics in Pyeongchang. He said the postponement was due to logistical concerns. Meanwhile, China said that it welcomed what it called the recent positive turn of events on the peninsula, as well as the positive moves taken by the DPRK and the Republic of Korea. Geng Shuang is the spokesperson for China's Ministry of Foreign Affairs. He said, "We always believe that to improve ties and promote reconciliation and cooperation through dialogue is in line with the fundamental interests of both North and South Korea and conducive to alleviating tension, advancing denuclearization, and promoting peace, stability, and security in the region." The spokesman added that China welcomed the concrete efforts by the North and South Korean governments recently and hopes the international community would support them and encouraged all parties concerned to do something helpful to alleviate tension and improve mutual trust. On Wednesday, North and South Korea reopened a cross-border hotline that had been shut down since 2016 after North Korean leader Kim Jong-un offered to send a team to the Winter Olympic Games next month. After the reopening, South Korea confirmed that officials from both countries had talked for 20 minutes. Seoul also responded to Kim's overture by proposing high-level talks next Tuesday to discuss matters of mutual interest, including the North's possible participation in the Winter Olympic Games beginning February 9th. These are among the top Asia stories trending on VOAnews.com. Chinese democracy advocates identify with Iranian protests. French President Macron heading to China to strengthen economic ties. 8 people killed by a mortar they tried to open in the Philippines. Ousted South Korean President Park faces additional bribery charges. And heavy snowfall shuts 3 China airports and delays 9 others. Expanded coverage of these stories and more is on Facebook at VOA Asia. and on the VOAnews.com website. We're glad you're with us. I'm David Byrd in Washington, and VOA Asia continues. The U.S. State Department says the United States will suspend military and security aid to Pakistan until Islamabad takes action against terrorist groups that have staged attacks against U.S. and coalition forces in Afghanistan. State Department spokeswoman Heather Nauert said the United States would not be delivering military equipment or security-related assistance to Pakistan unless it is required by law.
Until the Pakistani government takes decisive action against groups, including the Afghan Taliban and the Haqqani network, we consider them to be destabilizing the region and also targeting U.S. personnel, the United States will suspend that kind of security assistance to Pakistan.
Nauert said that the State Department is still calculating the value of the assistance that would be curtailed. Earlier this week, U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations Nikki Haley said the United States would withhold $255 million in military assistance to Pakistan. Nauert said that the Haqqani network and the Pakistani Taliban are destabilizing the region with cross-border attacks, but did say that Pakistan could receive the funding again if it takes decisive action against terrorism. Pakistan's ambassador to the United States, Ejaz Ahmad Chaudhry, told VOA that his country has worked with the United States to fight terrorist groups, including al-Qaeda, and should not be, in his words, on a collision course.
Pakistan has been providing, you know, lines of communications to the United States for a long time. We think that we had joint objectives, and therefore it was a partnership. It is a partnership to us. And it should be measured not in terms of money and monetary value, but in terms of the results that we have achieved together.
Chaudhry said that the U.S. administration should focus on addressing the issues of governance, corruption, deteriorating security, and the emergency of Islamic State in Afghanistan, saying that ungoverned spaces in between the neighboring country are threatening security and in Pakistan and the region in general. Meanwhile, Pakistan's defense minister says that his country is ready to face any action in the wake of President Donald Trump's New Year's Day tweet threatening the country. Khurram Dagastgir said that there should be no doubt or fear as the defense of Pakistan is in competent and strong hands. He said, we have to develop our strategy cool-headedly after analyzing both sides of the U.S. administration. Today we discuss this with the lawmakers. We have no doubts or fear as the defense of Pakistan is in competent and strong hands. The only thing we fear is that America may really take an extraordinary action which may cause us harm. We are ready for that. Dastagir's comments follow those earlier by Army spokesman Major General Asif Ghaffour, saying that Pakistan's response will be in line with the wishes of the Pakistani people. President Trump has accused Islamabad of providing a safe haven for terrorists. On Monday, he tweeted that the United States had foolishly given Pakistan more than $33 billion in aid in the last 15 years and had got nothing in return but lies and deceit. Pakistan denies supporting militants, pointing to its own war against extremist groups battling to overthrow the government. The U.S. State Department has placed Pakistan on a special watch list for severe violations of religious freedom. In a statement, the State Department said the protection of religious freedom is vital to peace, stability, and prosperity. These designations are aimed at improving the respect for religious freedom in these countries. The United States redesignated 10 other nations as countries of particular concern under the International Religious Freedom Act. Separately, the U.S. State Department designated Myanmar, China, Iran, and North Korea as countries of concern for having engaged in or tolerated violations of religious freedom. Eritrea, Sudan, Saudi Arabia, Tajikistan, Turkmenistan, and Uzbekistan were also on the list. The State Department statement, that is, acknowledged that several of the countries were working to improve their respect for religious freedom. It said, "We welcome these initiatives and look forward to continued dialogue. The United States remains committed to working with governments, civil society organizations, and religious leaders to advance religious freedom around the world." Happening in Asia, at least 15 people were killed Thursday when a suicide bomber struck an Afghan police convoy in Kabul. The bomber hit a police convoy that had been sent to quell a demonstration sparked by the tearing down of shops that sold alcohol. Islamic State has claimed responsibility. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're happy you're with us on this Friday morning. U.S. President Donald Trump said Thursday that any legislation that gives immigrants who entered the U.S. illegally as children the opportunity to become citizens must include funding for a border wall with Mexico while ending the chain migration process and the visa lottery program. At a White House meeting on immigration with Republican senators, Trump said our current immigration system fails Americans and cited chain migration as an example.
Our current immigration system fails Americans. Chain migration is a total disaster which threatens our security and our economy and provides a gateway for terrorism. Likewise, the visa lottery is bad for our economy and very bad for security. You saw that recently in New York along the West Side Highway.
The president was referring to an October 31st attack in New York City when 8 people were killed by an Uzbek immigrant who drove a truck down a bike path. Chain migration is a community or extended family-based process by which immigrants from a particular area follow others from that area to specific U.S. cities or neighborhoods. Trump also called for an end to the visa lottery program, which accepts applicants who have passed background checks and who have the equivalent of a high school education or experience in a job that requires a minimum of 2 years of training.
Any legislation on DACA must secure the border with a wall. It must give our immigration officers the resources they need to stop illegal immigration and also to stop visa overstays. And crucially, the legislation must end chain migration. It must end the visa lottery. Dangerous. And I think many of the Democrats agree with us on that now.
In September, President Trump rescinded the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals program, or DACA, which was instituted by former President Barack Obama. It protected nearly 800,000 immigrants from deportation, allowing them to legally live and work in the United States. Trump has given the U.S. Congress until March 5th to agree on legislation that would provide equivalent protections to those offered under DACA, including funding for his proposed border wall, and would end chain migration and the visa lottery. Republican Senator Lindsey Graham, a one-time political opponent of the president, said Thursday he believes that Trump can get immigration reform legislation through Congress.
Obama couldn't do it. Bush couldn't do it. I think you can do it. There's a deal to be had. If you want it bad enough, we'll get it. It'll be good for the country. Everybody's got to give a little bit. But I've never been more optimistic about an immigration reform proposal making it to the president's desk than I am right now.
Liberal groups want Democratic lawmakers to find a way to force immigrant protections into a government spending bill that must be approved by January 19th, even if it results in a government shutdown. Democratic lawmakers who support the protection of DACA beneficiaries enjoy broad public support. An NBC Wall Street Journal poll released December 19th found that 62% of those surveyed said Congress should approve protections for DACA immigrants, while 19% said Congress should allow DACA to lapse. You're listening to VOA Asia.
Hi, my name's Larry London. Welcome to Border Crossings, your request and dedication program here at the Voice of America. 1500 Universal, Monday through Friday, we're there for an hour playing your favorite music. You can send an email in and request your favorite songs by your favorite artist. You can also phone in as well. We have great contests and surprise guests from time to time. Border Crossings, every single day during the week at 1500 Universal, here on the Voice of America.
We have this news from VOA Asia. Australian officials raised most of the wreckage of a seaplane that crashed into an Australian river, killing five British tourists and the pilot. The DHC-2 Beaver seaplane was returning from a restaurant on New Year's Eve when it plunged into the Hawkesbury River. Visit VOA Asia Facebook each day for top stories and great features to see and share. This is VOA Asia. We're glad you're with us. I'm David Byrd in Washington. The Chinese ride-hailing giant Didi Chuxing said Thursday it had bought Brazil's 99 taxis, opening another front in the Beijing-based company's global battle with Uber. Didi, which claims to be the world's leading mobile transportation platform with more than 450 million users, had become a strategic investor in 99 taxis last January. It will now acquire the company outright, along with its 14 million registered users in Brazil, as it pushes into the growing Latin American car share market. Didi's founder and CEO, Cheng Wei, said in a statement announcing the purchase that globalization is one of his company's priorities, adding that the company would continue to seek diversified international operations and partnerships. The statement called the 99 taxis acquisition a significant next step of Didi's global strategy. Didi said it has now entered into partnerships with seven major international players, serving more than 1,000 cities worldwide, including Southeast Asia's Grab, India's Ola, U.S.-based Lyft, and Europe's Taxify. Didi and Uber have been waging a global turf war since Didi bought the U.S.-based company's China operations last year. Sao Paulo and Rio de Janeiro are Uber's top busiest cities in the world, as ranked by the number of trips that take place there. Didi last year became Asia's most valuable startup company. On Wall Street Thursday, the Dow Jones Industrials broke the 25,000 level for the first time, and other major indexes hit closing record highs again, propelled by strong global economic market data that extended the New Year's rally. The Dow Jones Industrial Average rose 152.45 points, or 0.6% to 25,075.13. The S&P 500 gained almost 11, or 0.4% to 2,723.99. The NASDAQ Composite added 12.38 points, or about 0.18%, that is, to 7,077.92. Volume held up despite a powerful blizzard that caused power outages and travel problems in the U.S. Northeast. About 7 billion shares changed hands on U.S. exchanges. That's above the 6.3 billion daily average for the past 20 trading days. You're listening to VOA Asia. I'm David Byrd in Washington. Remember, you can always follow us on our Facebook page. That's VOA Asia. And you can find the latest news from the continent on our website at voanews.com. All the big stories come your way through the day. This is VOA Asia. If you're a fan of the Star Wars films, you know that the droids C-3PO and R2-D2 are key characters as much as the humans or the many other creatures that you might find in that bar on Tatooine. While the droids are fantasy characters, the robotics industry is very real and has made impressive advancements in 2017. As reporter Faiza El-Masri and Faith Lapidus tell us, that's expected to continue as robots are becoming more sophisticated, doing more complicated tasks, and spreading almost everywhere.
Advancements in technology have made it possible for robots to efficiently carry out a wide variety of complicated tasks, whether at the workplace or at home. That didn't happen overnight. Humans have been working for centuries on creating robots. Last February, an exhibit at London's Science Museum traced 500 years of robotic development, showing how far we've come in this industry and how far we can still go. Visitors to a Berlin gallery got a chance to find out. The Five Robots Named Paul exhibit in February gave visitors a chance to find out what they would look like when five robots with different points of view drew their portrait. Residents in Washington, D.C. have become familiar with food delivery robots walking side by side with them on the street. The CeBIT Digital Business Fair in Hanover in March showcased a future where robots serve coffee.
You go, get it, and you get back to your work. If it's a person, he talks to people, it's a good personal touch, but like it delays you from your work.
In the United Kingdom, a company developed a smart robotic pet named Miro that uses artificial intelligence to interact with humans. And in South Korea, robots roamed the country's largest airport this past summer. At the InnoRobo Robotics event in Paris, so-called cobots, collaborative robots, were lending a helping hand. In Bucharest, Romania, a humanoid DIY robot was unveiled last May. In Belgium, a robot like this could improve a surgeon's precision by up to 10 times. All signs were pointing to a fully robotic future in manufacturing and engineering at the World Robot Conference in Beijing. A robotic conductor stole the show at a performance by renowned tenor Andrea Bocelli in the Italian city of Pisa. The unique show at the city's historic Teatro Verdi was part of the International Robotics Festival. In Japan, as hotels are gearing up for the 2020 Olympics by recruiting new helpers to ensure the best customer experience, one hotel is introducing robots to deliver room service. The advances are exciting and happening almost everywhere. But are we ready to lose our jobs to these machines? Some people have already been replaced by robots representing the latest in artificial intelligence.
As a new piece of automation comes in, people just move to something else that only at that time humans can do.
Advances in the robotics industry will continue, as will people's excitement and concerns at the changes. For writer Faisal Masri, I'm Faith Lapidus, VOA News.
Attorney General Jeff Sessions has announced that he will roll back an Obama-era policy that gave states leeway to allow marijuana for recreational purposes. The Justice Department on Thursday released a memo announcing that the so-called Cole Memo, which ordered U.S. attorneys in states where marijuana has been legalized to deprioritize prosecution, would be rescinded effective immediately. That sets up a conflict with one of the most populous states in the country because recreational use of marijuana is now legal in California. But only a few cities in the giant state are ready to start selling pot, which was officially legalized January 1st. The logistics of creating new business models is complicated, but it's clear the demand is high. VOA's Kevin Enix reports.
This is the line outside the MedMen Medical Marijuana Dispensary. All these people are waiting to legally buy recreational pot for the first time.
Oh, it's a historic moment. We were in line for an hour and a half, and I think it's great that I'm able to come in and do this today. It's a great day.
On January 1st, California became the sixth U.S. state to legalize the recreational use of marijuana, though it is still a federal crime to use, buy, or possess marijuana. But as the world's sixth largest economy and home to nearly 40 million people, the sheer size of the state is a game changer for the move to legalize pot.
It feels great buying marijuana for the first time. It's a win for human rights, the ability to have freedom to do what you want and express yourself and also have a good time.
Each locality has a complicated set of rules for starting up new businesses, and a number of California cities haven't yet finalized them for creating marijuana shops. But those that are up and running are busy, and the state's marijuana economy is expected to be worth several billion dollars.
This is what it's all about. I mean, this is the first day of legal recreational sales in the city of West Hollywood. There's a line of about 150 people outside. We're at capacity inside per the fire marshal, and as you can see, I mean, the excitement around legal adult marijuana is evident.
That's VOA's Kevin Enix. You've been listening to VOA Asia. You can get our program on iTunes and SoundCloud. You can find us on Facebook at VOA Asia. Thanks to our director, Diane Gao, and our engineer, Dan Crafton, I'm David Byrd in Washington. Enjoy the rest of your day.